Blog Talk Radio.
Something happened to me last Thursday when I was driving home. I had a couple of miles to go. I looked up and saw a glowing orange object in the sky to the east. It was moving very irregularly. Suddenly, there was intense light all around me. When I came to it,
he's got a new book, The Secret History. Let's bring him on, Nick Radford.
Hey, Lauren. Nick.
What's up, man? What's going on? Pretty good. What's going on in the world of Nick Radford?
Oh, usual stuff, lecturing and book writing and magazine writing and traveling around a bit and fitting in a good time as well, so...
Well, you are a contributor to a lot of things, and I didn't even know you contribute to half of the different magazines and stuff like that, which is you're very diverse and everywhere, which I think is really important. And
to
nobody
what,
else. I was talking about how you're just really diverse in putting your stuff out there. You know.
Oh, sorry, magazine. You broke up a little bit when you said contribute to something. It kind of broke a bit then.
Contributing to, you know how it is.
Yeah, I do a lot of magazine stuff and, you know, just a lot of general freelance work and editing services for a lot of other authors. And so,
Hey, that's, you know, you're doing what you love too. And the things that you write about, I've noticed that all your books, it's all something that's it's an angle that hasn't been touched yet in the field. And, you know, you bring a total new aspect to it without any bullshit, and I appreciate that, too.
Oh, well, thanks. Well, I always try, you know, if you're going to write a new book and people are going to buy it, you want to be able to give them something new. And so that's why if I'm writing a book, I mean, if you're writing about an old case, if there's new material on it or new theories, you want to be able to bring that to the reader. So it's not just like a rehash of all the old stuff. And that's, you know, that's whether I'm doing cryptozoology like Bigfoot or Loch Ness Monster or if it's UFOs or conspiracies, I always try and apply that angle, you know, to whatever it is I'm writing about.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. So, speaking of different angles, the secret history of pretty much everything in this new book, what gave you the idea behind your latest installment?
Well, what happened was something that often happens is that a number of the publishers that I'm with, and in this case, Secret History published by a company called Visible Ink Press, they were actually looking for someone to do a book on conspiracies. And I thought, well, you know, the Visible Ink have like a regular way of putting their books out. They're also like 400 pages and 150,000 words. So, that, you know, they're big books. And so when they said, you know, would you be interested? I was like, well, yeah, I would. I said, but I'd prefer to sort of do it the way I want to do it, which is not to sort of focus on, you know, sort of 10 famous conspiracy theories, you know, the Kennedy assassination and Roswell.
Yeah, it's typical stuff we hear about all the time that I'm sick and tired of, you know.
Yeah, so what I did, I sort of put a synopsis together where instead of doing that, it was like, well, how about I do smaller chapters and we have like 60 conspiracies under the microscope going back thousands of years all through, you know, Middle Ages history, 18th, 17th century, and then right up to the 21st century. So in other words, you know, do a sort of completely across-the-board look study of conspiracy theories from the early years of civilization right to the present day and get as many as we can. So what I did was to, you know, write detailed chapters, but shorter chapters. So there's actually 60 totally separate conspiracy theories looked at in the book. And they liked the idea of me doing that, you know, whereas it wasn't just 10, you know, the top 10 or whatever. It was, you can dip into it anywhere. You know, you don't have to start at page one. You can just dip into any chapter as you like. So.
But you know what's awesome with that, Nick, is going all the way back to where it all began, you know, basically in the Egyptian times, but even before that, during the Middle Ages and stuff like that, same stuff happening, you know, because the control over the people, you know, and...
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, you can find in ancient religious texts all around the world, many of them were sort of rewritten, translated from one language to another, then rewritten again. Portions were taken out and deleted. New portions were added. And, of course, when you're translating things, words, you know, just got literally mistranslated as well. And so, in other words, what we see today with history being rewritten and, you know, stories being changed, it's actually been... It's been like that throughout the entirety of human history. It's like nothing, you know, technology might have advanced, but sort of the mindset of people hasn't. You know, it's just been the same forever, really.
It has, and, you know, it's what's really going crazy is going back, especially, not even, you know, people nowadays don't even know where we were conditioned to not know where we came from originally. I mean, who's to say we're not supposed to be eating each other or some cannibalistic stuff? Or, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I know I'm sounding crazy, but, you know, a far-fetched...
No, you're right. I mean, you know, we're right. I mean, in terms of ancient history, you know, you can go back sort of 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 years to the early years of civilization. And after that, a lot of it really is sort of very cloudy and foggy. You know, we know, for example, when Neanderthal man and Cro-Magnon man lived, you know, and sort of flourished. Cro-Magnon man sort of flourished around about 35,000 years ago. Neanderthal man started to die out not too long after that. We don't really know why Neanderthal man died out or why Cro-Magnon man flourished. And, you know, we have this image that you're kind of taught of at school as cavemen, you know, in rags and bearskins and carrying a club in one hand and pulling his wife back to the cave with by the hair in the other hand, you know.
That's typical punk rock Friday.
I mean, it was such a simplistic image. It's ridiculous. I mean, we know that both Neanderthal man and Cro-Magnon man, their brains were actually bigger than ours. Cro-Magnon man's, Neanderthal man's brain was actually about the size of a baseball bigger than our brains. We know from the way they buried their dead that they understood the implications of death and they had rituals, ritual burials. They were very skilled painters and artists. You can find all the fantastic cave paintings in France where, you know, they would rival stuff you would see in a museum today. And, you know, they were fascinated by the heavens and the stars and astronomy. They weren't just sort of dumb brutes, as we're told. So, in other words, even today in schools and lessons, you know, kids are taught this and that. It's actually sort of very, you know, different to the truth when you look into it. We're sort of taught a simplistic version of the past. One of the reasons being because we don't really have a full story of the past and people fill in the gaps and we're told, well, that's the truth when it actually isn't, you know.
Speculation. And, you know, it's just like, you know, we talk about the, you know, Cro-Magnons and, you know, and then it ends there. Do you think, you know, and a lot of people think that the reptilian alleged aspect came in and mixed along with that. Do you think there, obviously there was something else that mixed with that to be what we are today? Or what do you think, Nick?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have a lot of these stories, like, for example, about the Anunnaki. The whole story of the Anunnaki is sort of very controversial angle, but a very intriguing one. I mean, it's one of the sort of staple parts of ancient astronaut phenomena and lore, if you like, that actually fills in very closely with what, you know, you're talking about. it basically, the Anunnaki is sort of a staple part of the history of Mesopotamia, which today covers like Kuwait, Iran, Syria, Turkey, Iraq. And Anunnaki actually translates into English as those who from the heavens came to earth. Now, of course, bearing in mind these stories are thousands of years old, you have people who interpret them as gods or, you know, their own interpretation of a god or extraterrestrials. Now, certainly, there's no doubt that the one person more than any other who sort of turned the Anunnaki into sort of an extraterrestrial hypothesis was the late Zechariah Sitchin. And he talked about the, you know, he also talked about, like you mentioned, the reptilian angle. There have been theories that the Anunnaki were reptilian-like. Others suggest they were very human-like, but much taller than us, and that they were responsible for a lot of these stories of the so-called giants in the Bible. You know, the theory, you know, we have the stories of, you know, the gods coming down and mating with human women, and they talk about there being giants in the earth. Sitchin's theory was that the Anunnaki had like a genetic lineage to us, which kind of suggested maybe an even older connection with a still unknown alien race. But he felt there was sort of a connection to the point where we could interbreed with the Anunnaki. And when the Anunnaki realized that, you know, they took human wives and gave birth to offspring that was some like a cross between us and them. And this sort of gave rise to the idea that some of these legendary ancient characters like Goliath, you know, a giant human, were half human and half Anunnaki. So in other words, Sitchin viewed the Anunnaki and this ancient, you know, entities coming down as very much like a genetic experiment exploiting the human race as sort of a slave species, but also trying to genetically modify and change us. And, you know, and then it leads to these legends of, you know, the crossbreeding and, you know, the gods coming down and things like that. So.
Yeah. And, you know, what's really crazy about all that is it's the ancient suppressed knowledge that's been took from them times today hidden. And that's what's in all these secret societies. That's in the, you know, the alleged Illuminati, you know, but it goes deeper than that, you know. But that's where it comes from, is these ancient traditions, these ancient rituals, these ancient ways of...
No, you're right.
Especially the occult aspect of things. And I think it contributes to a lot of missing persons in this country, especially children and stuff like that. I mean, as bad as that sounds, as bad as it is, it's, you know, sadly it's true.
Well, I mean, it could be. I mean, you look back at, you can go back right into the early years of, you know, civilization and find ancient cults and, you know, secret societies and people being sacrificed, you know, to the gods and in the name of various cults and that kind of thing. And you begin to see how history can be manipulated and changed. I mean, for example, everybody knows the story of Noah's Ark. You know, it's a very famous, probably the most famous flood legend of all. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, all across the world, you can find flood legends, some of them which actually predate the Christian flood legend. The Epic of Gilgamesh, for example, you know, it talks about, you know, like with the Native Americans, all of these cultures have their own flood legends. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if, at all, if there was or were, you know, ancient massive floods that decimated the planet in possibly tens of thousands of years ago, you know, many, many years before civilization, as far as we understand it, began. But maybe there were people who came before us and were wiped out in giant floods, and that's why, you know, this sort of oral traditions are passed down across centuries and thousands of years. But, you know, most people are sort of taught the biblical accounts of the flood, you know, with Noah and the ark coming to rest on Mount Ararat and, you know, two by two of all the animals, et cetera, et cetera. But as I said, the Epic of Gilgamesh has its own version of that. Australian Aborigines, they have theirs. Native Americans have theirs. You can find similar ones in the UK. Everywhere, you know, there are these deep-seated, almost like inherited memories, you know, from times past that we've all inherited, that have sort of provoked the stories. But, you know, if you were just to read one, you know, like the Bible, you would think it was just one flood in one particular area involving Noah. But as I said, you can find these stories everywhere. So clearly, you know, I think, ironically, all these stories support the idea that there were large floods. But every religion has kind of put its own spin on it to say, no, it was our people in this one area and nobody else, you know. And that's how, again, how history has become changed over the years.
But you know, it's really it's interesting too. We go back to the Egyptian days of fall, the or Thoth. You know, a lot of people pronounce that very differently. It was the being with the, it looked like it had the bird or the owl's head or whatever. You know, and you know that alleged, we were talking about floods, and you know the alleged Atlantis and all that.
Well, yeah, I mean knowledge. Atlantis. Yeah. I mean, Atlantis, you know, I mean, a lot of people dismiss Atlantis and say it was just essentially like a fictional story because it, you know, came from Plato and it was essentially presented, you know, as a story and people said, well, that's all it was. But, I mean, you can find around the world stories and cultures and legends of very ancient but highly advanced civilizations that flourished and destroyed themselves or vanished, you know, in a flash or overnight or whatever. And, you know, that you've got, for example, not just Atlantis, but you have the, you know, the stories of, you know, like Mu and places like that. And to the point where when you look back at some of these legends, it really does sound like that in certain portions of the planet, many sort of in Middle Eastern areas and also India and Pakistan in those areas, that you had cultures that flourished and then in many ways possibly localized, not necessarily on like a worldwide huge civilization, but localized in certain areas that may have actually developed technologies that in some ways rivaled and possibly even, excuse me, surpassed ours. But, you know, they went down the path that we might one day, you know, the to destruction. I mean, we've done well since 1945 when we first tested and then used the atomic bombs on Japan. We've done well to actually survive in that less than 70 years. We've come close to nuclear war a couple of times, certainly the most obvious case, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis in 62. You know, that if Kennedy and, you know, Khrushchev hadn't figured things out, We probably wouldn't be talking. Well, we wouldn't be talking now. You know, the planet would just be in ruins still, even 50 years later. So, you know, without being pessimistic, I'm surprised. You know, we've got as far as we have, and maybe it's just some genetic coding in the human race that we're destined to destroy ourselves. You know, and repeat the process over and over again. It may take sort of 10,000-12,000 years for a worldwide cataclysm to allow people to recover. And when they do, so many generations have gone by and people have descended into savagery again that they forget the people who came before them. And it's just relegated to myth and legend like Atlantis. You know, people today say, well, of course there wasn't an Atlantis, it's just a story. People might say be saying the same about us 50 years ago. 50,000 years from now, they might be saying, well, there weren't really people who flew around the sky in metal craft and, you know,
yeah,
things like that.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, that could actually happen, you know. So.
Yeah, well, see, that's my theory, Nick. I think that, you know, I'm sure somebody else has had it for me in this day and age that we live in where everything's been done practically before, but it's been destroyed, rebuilt, and even not of what we know about of before that. I think it's been the strongest has survived and what's been created and mixed around, you know, pretty much. It's really interesting that just to know there's more to what the we've been led to know, especially in these generations from the, well, in the 50s, it was like, you know, everybody lived, they didn't want to know nothing, you know, especially going through after World War II. It's that, and it was in that constant living in fear. And that's what we do today, Nick, is live in fear. And it's because of all the things that,
well, you're right, but I mean, I always tell people, you know, don't live in fear. I mean, be yourself, stand up and say what you think and do what you want, which is what I do. And I try and encourage people to do that because, you know, I mean, there's fear is a major tool of control. If you can have people in fear, then they'll do basically what you want them to do. You know, they just want the fear gone. But, yeah, I mean, that's one of the major unfortunate parts of today's society. You know, it's kind of like when I was a kid, I'd ride my bike around town till 8 o'clock at night. You know, my mum and dad would be, oh, just come back when you're ready, you know, when the sun goes down. I'd come back and I'd fallen off my bike and scratch your legs and your knees and, you know, you're bruised up. Well, today it's like, oh no, you can't have the kids out after sunset. You can't even have them out before sunset, or, you know, they're going to get murdered or kidnapped or whatever.
They can't even be playing in your eyesight right in front of 10 feet. Yeah, but that's the thing back from your generation, is you were safe. You were safe, Nick. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, great extent, you could still have that life here.
Yeah,
you're told it's not safe.
You've got to be more vigilant.
Yeah.
You've got to be more vigilant and more cautious around your surroundings, you know, even if somebody...
Well, you do, but I mean, I don't say that the world hasn't become more violent, because it has, but you can it's been over-exaggerated, and it's kind of like, you know, if I fell off my bike when I was a kid, well, my mom would put some soap and water on it, clean the cut-up or whatever. Today, you know, parents are running around with antiseptic cream and this, and then racing off to the local, you know, clinic or whatever, and worrying it's going to spread and viruses are going to set in. It's like, you know, take it easy. It's, you know, they fell off the bike and got a scratch. Kids have been doing that for decades. You know, chill out. They're not going
to
get
some
weird
fire. They're also wanting to sue people, too. This is a time of where everybody wants to sue everybody, too, because they think they're entitled to some kind of punitive damages. It's just, it's crazy, Nick. It really is. And it's great that there's writers like you that's able to put all this information out. And, you know, the times we're living in right now, you know, what other people do, you know, I'm all about. But I think that there's a big, giant, like, Illuminati dehumanizing thing going on right now. This whole aura of just, like, craziness, and I hate using that word, but there's just been a bad vibe in the air, let's just say that, and it's just unsettling, and I think you've picked up on the same thing.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think what's going on in the world today, you know, people often point the finger at governments and say they're the bad guys and, you know, the CIA, the FBI. I actually don't believe that at all. What I do believe is that there are very powerful figures around the world that actually, you know, work outside of governments, but they're extremely powerful, very rich, very ancient lineages, you know, and ties to rich families, also ties to governments and royalty and secret societies, but they're essentially like an elite group that manipulates world events and which have an impact on governments, but it's actually not the governments that are the bad guys. They're being sort of manipulated themselves, you know, into certain situations. And because we see the government, we assume it's them that's doing it. But I actually do believe that a lot of the, you know, the stuff that's going down today that's sort of pushing us more and more down like a George Orwell 1984 world, I think a lot of that is being skillfully manipulated by powerful groups that are, for all intents and purposes, like invisible, and, you know, they're pulling the strings, they have all these tentacles and, you know, ties into big business and companies and probably got a lot of material on people they can blackmail them with, and they're the ones who change things, they're the ones who mold things but they're constantly hidden in the background, and they're the ones we need to look out for, you know, that they're the ones causing all the problems in today's world.
I was reading a book, man. I don't know if you ever heard of it before. It was Transformation of America by Kathy O'Brien. You ever heard of that book?
No, I don't know that one, no.
Man, it was crazy. Allegedly, she was groomed by Robert C. Byrd, the senator, for years. And it mentioned how she had she played these different roles with these presidents where she was pretty much like a sexual monarch, mind control slave. And they even mentioned Michael Aquino in there talking about how him and Reagan was working, when they're doing all that drugs and stuff like that, or this guy named Ortega and stuff like that, and mentioned all these people that, and, you know, from my personal experience, an audible version online, and when I was listening to all this crazy stuff about people that they mentioned Dick Cheney, it mentioned all these people of power and doing all these crazy sexual acts and hanging out with Michael Aquino, which is a fucking the cult man himself. You know what I'm saying? It don't get no darker or deeper than that, you know.
Well, I mean, you can look into history and find, the way in which, people manipulated within government, where, you know, as I said, it's not actually government stuff. It is sort of cult-like organizations that get their grips into people in government and they recruit them. So, in other words, you might have somebody who holds a position of power in any government around the world, but they also have this secret life where they're part of some secret fraternity. And it's the secret fraternities that hold the power, and then they use the people that they've got inserted into government to do their work for them. So that's why, again, I think a lot of this stuff looks like the governments are the bad guys when they're actually not. But there are people inserted into the government who want to change society, who want to put us in like a slave-like environment where we're constantly monitored, where they want us living in fear. You know, they want us stuck in front of the TV all the time when we're not working. They want to warn you why it's so important not to leave the house at night, you know, and kids have to stay inside and just text all day long. You know, there's clearly like, as I see it, a concerted program to try and rework the human mindset into like a slave-controlled world, essentially. And, I don't apologize for saying that. If people think that sounds extreme, well, that's too bad. You know, I think there is somebody outside of government, but very powerful figures are trying to re-sculpt the entire planet in terms of civilization and, you know, future society.
And we were looking at all the things now. They're taking one thing, they're taking a situation and trying to rewrite history over these situations. And what I mean by situations, I'm talking about these lone gunmen killers. And you know, it's really crazy, and I'm writing a little bit about it, but is that from the Jared Lautner and the Gabrielle Giffords all the way down to what happened in South Carolina, there was always a senator-involved senator in South Carolina, being the Reverend, that sadly passed away. But there's a connection with all these lone gunmen and trying to push an agenda with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And, you know, I think the good thing is, you know, we can talk about this and, you know, you can talk about it. We can actually agree. And, you know, this is the important thing here that, you know, we can all agree on this. We all know what's going on. You know, the problem is getting it out to people, and not just getting it out to people, you know, but actually galvanizing them into actually thinking about doing something about it and asking questions.
Yeah.
And that's That's the problem. It's all very well people knowing, but if nobody, you know, does anything with it or acts on it, we're in, you know, it's essentially the information.
Yeah, it's like great. Me and you are on the same level. Awesome. But,
yeah.
You know, if me and you go talk to somebody else or something we normally would talk about, they would probably think that we're either crazy or they get scared. Or, you know what I mean? It's that, it's just that ignorance. And something that's really deep in my world, and not my world, but I'm fully awake and I know what's going on in front of the scenes and behind the scenes. And then there's just a lot of people that don't want to know about it completely, want to be shut out in the dark and don't mention it, or they're going to get scared.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a really good point you bring up, because a lot of people, you know, they view the world today as a scary place, and you're right, they actually, it's not that, you know, they want to know and they want to find out. A lot of people just do not want to know. They prefer to just be in the house with the blinds down and the TV on, because if they live like that, they just don't have to worry about what's going on, you know. Turn the news off, let's, you know, we don't want to watch the news, let's put another reality show on, because they're frightened of what the news is going to tell them. You know, well, that, to me, that's no way to live. You know, the way to live is to, we should be able to live freely and not live in fear, and that's how it should be. You know, there's no reason why we should be enslaved just because somebody, you know, some anonymous elite, you know, ancient lineage decides to take that approach.
Whether they affect the school, it's like, I'm even weird about cinema. I've been living in Chicago for about 5 years, and I had a kid in that time, and sending them to public schools, it's really, especially Chicago public schools, it's leaves me kind of nervous all day.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well,
it's just,
well, no,
and
I mean,
don't
I
want
get
to
that.
Be,
no.
But I want to think that my kids, you know, and I told the people at Wheat, I was like, you know, I appreciate, you know, him coming, you know, taking care of my son and all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But in the back of my mind, I'm always wondering, is he safe? Is he all right? Just all them things that go in, and, you know, which I know that's just the nature of being a parent. But even if it ain't my kid, you know what I'm saying, that something's going you know, in this city especially, with all the crime, all the murders, all the stuff like that, child abductions, all this crazy stuff that goes on in Chicago here, it's, in the time that I've lived here, it's made me very vigilant, but I try to give it a chance, but I've seen how it's all corrupt, especially in this city. It's like the most, you know, and, but, you know, my whole point is, Go ahead. I was just going to say,
I think part of the problem is the way in which society has changed so radically in the last 20 years, and, you know, much due to the internet age. Not to say the internet isn't a massively important and good tool. It certainly is. You know, it's changed our lives in massively positive ways, but it's also changed our lives in very negative ways. You know, the sort of isolation of entire generations of children now who just don't do the things that kids did, not just, you know, two generations ago, but throughout entire history. Like I said, playing outside and, you know, running around, getting exercise, not getting diabetes at 12, you know. That is a direct outgrowth of the internet in part. Also, the fact that, you know, the breakdown of social contact between kids and parents, you know, everybody just texting each other or whatever, just not talking, or doing stuff or going anywhere. And then, of course, you know, you have the issue of, well, you're told not to do this. And then you have the other issue of pharmaceuticals, the encouraging, you've got to go on this pill, you've got to go on this medicine, dumbing down people even more, where they become addicted to pharmaceutical medicines. And, you know, they're sitting at home doing nothing except popping pills. And it's a recipe for disaster. And it's no wonder that, you know, the world becomes more and more bizarre and strange and dangerous, because society is being placed in a situation where people are being literally changed, you know. So,
you know, it's
what's really crazy about that, Nick, is it seems like, you know, even though we live in a great awakening right now, there is still a suppression of knowledge. It's just like, how do you think we could take it, or from, you know, my listeners to, like I said, the next level?
Things can change because things have changed throughout history. I mean, you know, you can go back, you know, 500 years and people were being burned at the stake for saying that the earth was flat, you know, but we got past that. You know, it's like with witchcraft trials, witches burned at the stake. They weren't witches. They were just, you know, people who perhaps dabbled with herbs, you know, and different plants to make medicines. And they're like, oh, they're a witch. You know, you had like the religious wars, like the Crusades. We got past that, you know, and granted, you know, religion has sort of spawned another war now. You know, we had the Second World War when, you know, millions of people were killed, atomic bombs going off, Hitler, you know, putting thousands of people into gas chambers. Well, actually, not thousands, millions of people, you know. And and we got past all that. So, and, you know, we had 6 years of war, 39 to 45. So if we can get past that and come out the other side, okay, we've gone back the wrong way again now, the way society's going. But we could overcome it again. It just requires, you know, everybody to get together. I mean, somebody said to me, I was talking the other day about, they're on about, you know, these theories about one day the whole population is going to be microchipped. And the person said to me, well, how do we stop that? And I said, well, easy. All of the 300 million people in the US just say no. You know?
Yeah, really.
Everybody just says, no, I'm not going to be implanted. And what's the option? You know, 300 million people can't be rounded up. But the problem is, it requires everybody to stand up and say no. So it's not that it can't be done. You know, it's kind of like nobody wants to make the first move. You know, if your neighbor makes the move, then maybe you will as well. And then the next guy down the street does. And then it spirals on. But nobody wants to be the first person to stand up and say no. But if everybody just said no to this and no to that, then it would go back to the way it should be. But it's, you know, creating that mindset in people that people have the ability to change things, you know.
Well, I know you live in Texas. I got to ask this question just between us. Do you carry?
Do I what?
Do you carry a firearm or
No. No, I don't. But, I mean, I understand why in today's world, you know, I mean, the people do, but it's almost, you know, I mean, the whole gun law issue is a controversial issue, you know, and there are pros and cons and all sorts of angles to it because, you know, it's almost like by default you're forced to have a gun because the criminals have got guns, and the whole situation, there's no way everybody's guns can be taken off them. It'd just be sort of an incredible task. And how would you even know that all the criminals have handed in their guns? You know, that's just like a fairyland story. You know, it's impossible.
It's like, come on, hand in your guns, criminals. Come on, bring them in.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a situation where it becomes like a catch-22. People may not feel comfortable with owning a gun, but if they find out, you know, in their apartment complex 2 days before, somebody shot his neighbor, and then a week after that, somebody else shot the neighbor. It's like, well, I'm in the same apartment as them. I better get a gun. And so it spirals and spirals. And unfortunately, you know, most people are hopefully, you know, when it comes to having a gun, that they are careful and take the right approach and be respectful to what a gun is and what it can do to people. But for every 50 people like that, there's somebody who thinks it's cool to own a gun and flash it around and take it out, you know, and wander around knowing they've got it in the back pocket and it makes them feel cool and whatever. That's where the problems start. You know, if you've got a pistol in your house and, you know, it's in the drawer and you've got it because you're in a violent area, and if somebody breaks in, you have the right to defend yourself. That's fine. But the problem is pistols, guns have been glorified. And when guns are glorified, it's a recipe for disaster, you know.
It really is. But, you know, the thing about it is, you know, I believe that protecting yourself. But, you know,
I agree with you.
A place in Chicago where it's the most dangerous and you're not allowed to protect yourself, that's whenever it gets crazy. That's when you got to be creative.
But, yeah, I mean, it's like... You know, I mean, I get it when people... I mean, the one thing I would say is that it's hard now to sort of change things when so many people have got guns. But, you know, my view, if I was president, you know, which I'll never be, obviously, but if I was president, you know, I would have a tough time trying to figure out how to kind of draw back from gun violence. I mean, what do you do? You can't turn the entire nation, you know, just... raid everybody's house and grab the guns, like, you know, sort of Nazi Germany. But you know, if you ask the good people to turn in their guns, a lot of them might, but then they're going to be more open then to the criminals, so that's not going to work either. The only thing I could suggest would be that there are more stringent rules to being how you're allowed to get a gun. You know, I know background checks are done, but you know, regardless of whether a person's got a criminal record or not, I mean, some people might not like to hear this, but my view would be that if somebody's ever been on pharmaceutical drugs for anxiety, stress, depression, they shouldn't have a gun. You know, that's just my view. Anybody who's had any sort of psychological condition, in my view, should not be allowed to handle something that could blow somebody's head off.
Now, I know, Nick, if you've ever been, if they ever take you to a... I mean, like, if say you're going to the hospital and they admit you to the other hospital, like the psych ward, then legally you won't be able to own a firearm. But that's just in that state. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you could go to live, you know. So it's not, you really can't track the stuff, and it's just
you can't.
There's really
no answer. I actually don't think there is an answer to gun crime where it can be resolved. I just don't see how it can be done. You know, that you just got...
Because the good people
It's like that kid last week. You know, she killed all those people. Yeah, I mean, it's just... People like that can't be reasoned with. You know, they get their hands on a gun and just disaster happens. You know, and... It's an unfortunate part of society that I just don't know how you kind of reel it in and stop it. I just don't know.
I know it's, and I hate to end such a great show on a unanswered question, but hey, that's the exact answer is we really don't know how to control these guns, and you know we can't predict the future either, Nick, and you know that's another thing,
I don't think it's a bad thing to finish on a question because it leaves people something.
That mystery,
you know,
I think it's I think it was a great note. I was going to build it up there, but you pretty much hit it.
Well, we're coming on the ground from the Anunnaki and Goliath to pistols.
hey, that's awesome stuff all the time, man. Hey, I appreciate you coming on tonight, Nick.
Thanks for having me on.
Good time.
All right, sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, buddy. Hey, good night.
See you later.
See you later, Nick. He's such a great guy. So full of knowledge. Secret histories that we know and that we don't know. Until next week, our strange surroundings, secret universe.